Inconceivable!
Will you please act like you have more than a two-word vocabulary?
Is there air? You don't know!
And now, a yak.
Yak?
Hey, don't touch that dial. You found Secular Yakking.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Amy.
After years.
Many years of yakking at each other.
We're here to yak at you.
So sit back and enjoy the yakking.
Welcome back, yakkers. This week we're going to have a special encore presentation. I had spent a little time in the hospital this evening, so I am not really up to producing a full show. So this week we're going to listen to the interview I did with Nikki Mungo and Christy Hart last summer about death and atheism. I hope you have as much fun listening to it as I did doing it. And we'll be back next week with a full show. So see you next week, guys. So welcome, Nikki and Christy, to Secular Yakking. Glad to have you here.
Hi. Hello.
So you guys work on this secular grief issue, right? You've done, from what I've read, quite a bit of work on it.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Could you guys give us a little bit of history? We'll start with you, Christy. What got you into the secular grief issue?
I lost my daughter who was 22 years, I lost her, it'll be 2 years ago, last July. And she died from suicide after a battle with drug abuse. And through her illness, we battled with issues of having only religious services available to us. Even at her funeral, I had to deliver her eulogy because we couldn't find anybody to do it in a secular manner. A few months after that, I got married, and we wanted a secular wedding, and that took a bit of work. And the grief process and the healing process for people who are not religious can be a bit lonely. So we generally have to reach out for one another. And I'm also a lifelong atheist. I was born into a family that's been atheist for many, many generations. So I've never had a church background.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I don't meet a lot of lifelong atheists. I know a few of my friends are, but it's really nice to meet some that have always been atheist. And yeah, we do sympathize with you and your daughter. So
thank you.
And you, Nikki, what got you into this grief issue?
Well, unfortunately, I sort of belong to the same club as Christy, and we don't have any for child loss. And we've lost a spouse, a widow, so we don't really know what to call ourselves, a parent. So after the death of my 21-year-old son, 2 months past his birthday, he'd had issues surrounding coming out gay around family and friends, and ultimately died of what was deemed an accidental OD, but parents in that situation never, ever really know for sure. So, you know, ODs often get lumped in with, you know, the suicide as far as, you know, stigma and society kind of not knowing how to deal with us. So after that particular trauma, you know, I went looking for, I guess, you know, some sort of community and people to grieve with. And what I found running in, you know, social media sites like Facebook, grief groups on there was just, you know, a lot of talk that really helped me at all. And to be honest, it infuriated and it did not aid me in my grief process at all. And eventually we did find Rebecca Hensler's, Grief Beyond Belief group, which, you know, led to a small group of that membership, splitting off and making our own little cubby hole where we can, you know, openly express ourselves. And that was sort of where I met Christy. So that was kind of how it all got started. And so Christy and I have both been working on different secular issues. So it was really, really nice running into her and, you know, joining forces and finding people who, you know, share your experiences and know that, you know, secular grieving is really, really difficult in the United States.
I also find it interesting that Nikki and I have had so many of the same issues, even though we live in two different parts of the country. And Nikki and I, our children were close to the same age, went through similar battles, and they also passed away around the same time. And we've kind of both had a similar experience with the grieving process and the difficulty with finding secular resources.
Right. Yeah. I haven't been through quite the same issues of you, but I do understand that the need for secular resources, especially in the grieving process. And that's something we should certainly be fighting for as a community.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something you don't know that you'll need until you're in that scene. And so, you know, a lot of the opposition that I ran in from, you know, our own secularity, and they consider these sorts of issues somewhat petty, and there's, you know, larger be putting our attention to and fighting for. And, you know, I don't know, but if it was you sitting there in an ER being told you're, you know, your kid is brain dead, I think you might, you know, change your mind about that issue.
Right.
So unfortunately,
I certainly agree with Nikki there. And that's one point that I've been trying to bring forward to the secular community, is that this is important. This is an issue that all of us someday are going to face. We're all going to face grief at some point, death sometime in our life, whether it's ourselves, a loved one. And you don't want to be in that position where you suddenly need the help and it's not there.
Right.
You need to be planning for this future.
Yeah, and I'm really surprised.
Right. And it's up to the...
I'm really surprised that the secular community, you know, we talk about empathy as part of our morality. And to get the reaction that you guys have gotten, it just seems out of character for us. It really does.
I agree, but also...
Go ahead. It confounds, because, you know, it is empathy and it is compassion. And the issue that I think a lot of people have separating with this, and you're speaking about hospital chaplains, even secularists have a hard time removing the sort of spirituality and religious composition of that. And what they don't realize is that there are secular chaplains who do exist. And having someone come and tell you, just simply hold your hand and talk to you about the, you know, mitochondrial DNA. I mean, that's something that I find comforting, is knowing that my child, you know, especially the firstborn, that his DNA actually lives on in my brain. So when people say he's still with you, I convert that science ahead to that's what this means to me, you know.
I can also speak from the viewpoint of a nurse, and I've been a nurse for almost 25 years now, and I actually began fighting for this issue several years before my daughter passed away, because I did deal with patients who suffered losses who were secular, and there was one hospital I worked in where there was one of our chaplains could pretty much fit anything into any belief system that someone had. She was very well educated on all of these issues. But for the most part, hospitals really tend to resist the idea of secular chaplains being a part of the hospital system. So I have been fighting this for quite some time, and I know firsthand about the difficulties that secular people will face, and many times when they go to a hospital and they need help beyond medications and basic medical care.
Right. Yeah, certainly.
And part
glad.
Of that is because the chaplaincy is outsourced, and, you know, they're subcontracted essentially through religious organizations to provide these chapels. So I think the hospital, they are then absolved of having to, you know, make sure or ensure that they cover, you know, every possible type of religious to non-religious, you know, tragic sort of counseling, having someone like that on call. And, you know, that's, I think, sort of the problem that we ran into here in St. Louis, you know, is that it's run by a completely another organization from the hospital independently.
I can also say, speaking to that, that there has been somewhat of a movement in the last several years from basic hospital accreditation societies to include, they call it cultural understanding in hospitals. And so many people will have this experience of going to a hospital, and when you're at the registration booth, they ask you what religion you are. So there's been a movement to try to include more religions, but generally those religions have been Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, maybe Buddhist, and that's pretty much it. If you belong to any other group, they're probably just going to call the on-call Baptist minister to come and see you.
Whether you want them or not.
Yeah, non-denominational.
Non-denominational,
so,
yeah.
I was also wondering, do you guys have a similar issue that we have out here? So what we have going on out here is Catholic hospitals taking over formerly secular organizations. I mean,
yes.
Do you guys see that out there too?
Yes, especially in my area. I live in New Orleans. Louisiana, our current governor has pretty much gutted our healthcare services down here. And for a lot of people who live in the more rural areas, some of them may have to drive 2 or 3 hours to get to the nearest hospital. That is a very common thing here. And a lot of these hospitals that are smaller hospitals out in rural communities have been bought up by Catholic hospitals. And this actually is something that I really have had to deal with in the past. I don't work for a Catholic lady now, but I've had to deal with this in the past because I work in maternal child health and labor and delivery. So we know the Catholic doctrine on abortion, et cetera, and that is a major issue. There's actually a case right now that I heard about a few months ago that may make it to the Supreme Court that's based on this very issue.
Well, I'll try and look that up because that sounds really interesting.
I can just give you the brief part of it. A young woman went to a hospital, and she was about 18 weeks pregnant, so 6 weeks before the child was even viable outside the womb, and her bag of waters had broken.
Ooh.
And I'm talking about this from a case. This is not a patient I was involved with. This is from a case that's out there that's public knowledge, so I'm not breaking any confidentiality rules here.
Okay.
And she went to a Catholic hospital, and when the bag of waters breaks, of course, the risk of infection increases. Women can get septic, and they can die from this. And the Catholic hospital, she lived again in a rural community where this was really the only hospital available to her. And they didn't even offer her the possibility that they could terminate the pregnancy because the baby still had a heartbeat, which often happens when the bag of waters breaks early. And so they really risked this young woman's health, and she ended up, of course, miscarrying, went through a very traumatic experience that she shouldn't have had to have gone through.
Right. I seem to remember hearing about that case. So I've been following
it. It's going to be a very interesting one to follow.
Yeah, it is. I've been following it somewhat loosely, but I do remember hearing about that case.
Yeah, especially when many patients who go to these hospitals receive Medicaid or some government form of insurance. Even though it's a private Catholic hospital, there still are separation of church and state issues. And there are basic issues that hospitals are supposed to help the people that they serve and not risk their lives. But this is what's happening. And many times with the issue with the Catholic hospitals is in women's and obstetric issues. That's really most of it. And I often compare this to saying, suppose the only hospital that you had in a 3-hour drive was owned by Jehovah's Witnesses, and you're in a horrific car accident, and you're bleeding, and a blood transfusion is going to save your life. And that's what you need. You cut an artery, and you need human blood. And Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in blood transfusions. You're going to lay there and die. And I've sometimes said that that's something that can happen to anybody of any gender, of any age. And since the contraceptive issue, the pregnancy issues generally deal with younger females, it doesn't seem to be a high priority for a lot of people.
Right.
But if you knew that the only hospital you could go to if you were in a horrific car accident, you couldn't get a blood transfusion, many more people would probably take an issue with that.
Yeah, I certainly agree that most people would. And that plays back into the empathy, I think, it's just think about how it affects others, not just you, you know?
Absolutely. And it could affect any of us.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I got I got three young daughters myself, and it very well may affect them because, you know, we have some Catholic hospitals around here, and I am a bit rural where I am, obviously, because it took me 3 days to get power back on. But have you guys contacted anyone from, like, graduates of the Clergy Project about secular chaplaincy?
The what?
The Clergy Project?
No, I haven't contacted the Clergy Project, but I have contacted just about every chaplain director at every hospital in the area.
I have contacted the Clergy Project along with several other, and I have never gotten any response.
Well, that's really interesting because, you know,
I did get a response from the military. Go ahead.
Did you?
Well, that's mm-hmm. a plus.
The chaplain for the American military, yeah, I'll have an organization, but yeah, that was nice. And they were pretty positive and helpful. You know, they had just fought and barely won getting, you know, secular chaplains added, you know, the military list. So, yeah, that was very empowering.
Yeah, that would be. I'm surprised you didn't get anything from the Clergy Project. That's very, very interesting. So I figured that would be the first place that would be willing to do something like this. So
I'd be glad to try again.
Right.
Maybe.
We haven't given up yet.
Right.
I've been on an all-out email campaign with a lot of different associations, and it's for some reason you just I don't get a lot of responses, and the responses that I have gotten from some have just not been good.
Well, I think that might play back into the idea that grief is just so difficult to deal with. We like to avoid it as long as we can. I mean, the death of a loved one is very, very difficult. So that might have something to do with it. But
you're cutting in and out.
Oh, sorry about that. So I was saying that part of the issue might be is that grief is something so hard for us to deal with, and that maybe we just try to avoid it.
Oh, right, right. Well, and it forces you to cope with just don't want to think about it.
Right.
And guess what? Everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
For you, you know? Yeah, and everybody you know is going to die. You know, we be all, you know, Debbie Downer, but that's the reality. You're all going to die. You
right.
know?
Yeah, and so. I think some of us, too, who are dealing with grief and I guess you'd call it baggage like this, is that sometimes you walk down the street or you're in the grocery store and you feel like you're that woman with mom whose daughter died of suicide tattooed across your mm-hmm. forehead, and you don't want to be Debbie Downer wherever you go. You don't want to be the Grim mm-hmm. Reaper. You don't want to be that negative person that this is all you ever talk about. So there certainly comes a time where you just have to start trying to let it go a little bit and go on with life.
Right.
You never let it never completely leaves you. The pain will always be here until the day I take my last breath. But you have to start to learn to live again. And I don't want to be that person that people see coming and they turn the other way because they don't want to talk to deal with me.
Right, right. Well, and the only way I've really found a cope is by fighting back. I've always been fairly active, all of the same pursuits, but this really lit a fire. That's how I cope. I fight back, and I would compare it to something like MAD, Mother's a Truck Driver. You know, I think a lot of times that's what it takes moms to get kicked off, unite, and, you know, tell everybody no more, you know, we're the moms.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing is when you go through this, you want to learn from your experience. You know, I've certainly wanted my child's death to mean something to other people. I want her life to have mattered to other people. My daughter was a very, very giving, loving individual, and I almost think that she had this deep, sincere empathy. I always said she was like she just felt the pain of the world on her shoulder, and she always carried it with her. And in her suicide note, she actually asked for us to share her story and hopefully in hopes that other people could learn from different aspects of it and maybe make a better world for people. And I think Nikki and I both feel that deep sense of compassion that we don't want other people to have to deal with these tragedies and hurt the way that we have.
And what led to them being so, you know, they were pointless tragedy in a different society that wasn't so you know, heavily and just archaic superstition. And, you know, I think it might be a little different. I can't help but believe that, you know, that if we got rid of some of the ridiculous societal norms that, you know, are ancient precepts that, you know, and specifically, you know, Christian precepts for the United States, that,
right.
You know, I think we'd see a lot of our problems. I mean, I'm not saying people will magically, you know, we would have a secular utopia, hardly, you know, but I think that, you know, speaking as far as a democracy and a society, I see improvement in a lot of those areas.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you
there. There was actually a study released fairly recently that discussed children who were brought up in a secular family, and they did find that those children had a very increased sense of empathy for their fellow human beings.
Yeah, I can certainly attest to that. My children are somewhat, I hesitate to say better than other children, but they certainly grasp those concepts a lot more. They have a lot more empathy, especially for those that aren't like them. So yeah, I think that study is absolutely right.
Yeah, it means a lot when you are living this life, knowing that this is the only one that you're going to have, and you want to make something of it. You want to do the best that you can. You want to help other people, and your motivation is not an after-death supernatural heaven or paradise or whatever. Your motivation is to help people in the here and now.
Right.
And I do think that that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's something we certainly try to instill in our daughters. And they have certainly come through with that. One of my daughter's favorite shirts is a shirt that came out a couple of years ago. It says, "Let my gay friends marry the hell out of each other."
Oh, that's wonderful.
And she just loves to wear that whenever she can.
That's wonderful.
Hi there. This is Matthew the Apostle. Have you been wondering if it was your local pastor that ran away with the church's money and the deacon's wife? Do you just want to know if it was your rabbi that was arrested for planting a spy camera in the women's bathhouse? Has it ever crossed your mind that it might just be your archbishop that was arrested for fondling children in his care? Or do you just want to know more about the Southern Baptist pastor who was arrested for seeking a little canine carnal companionship? If you've answered yes to any of these questions, you need to listen to In the Name of God, the podcast, your weekly roundup of the most bizarre and hypocritical actions of the people who claim to live the pure and pious life as dictated by their God. In the Name of God, the podcast, the religious news from the Atheist Apostle, a proud member of the Secular Outreach Network. On the web at secularoutreach.com.
You guys mentioned earlier Rebecca Hensler's group. Can we talk a little bit about that? I know it's a secret group, but...
No, I don't think... are you talking about Grace Beyond Belief?
Yeah.
It's closed. It's not secret.
Oh, it's closed. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, you know, it's a very, very good group. You are, you know, just coming fresh out of it, and you're shocked and you're stupefied, and, you know, they do have other kind of offset groups from that group that are more particular, you know, as far as like widows and child loss and so on. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have found any of my most instrumental grief support group had it not been for Beyond Belief. So, you know, it's, you know, definitely something for people to look into if they're, you know, struggling with, you know, secular grief issues. And we all know what I'm talking about. So I don't know what else to call them.
I personally, with the group, I met a lot of other really wonderful people there, like Nikki, who have become great friends. My overall experience, though, sometimes, you know, you have a few bad apples. There were a couple of people in the group that had a problem with my daughter having died from suicide. And they, so I did not have the best experience on that group outside of meeting other people who were going through similar, who then became friends of mine. So I've told a few other secular moms who've lost kids to suicide, just to kind of be aware of that aspect.
Right. Well, and it's Facebook. It's a large, large group, and, you know.
Yes, several thousand people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of hard. It's really, really hard to moderate a group like that at Cozy Healing. So, and they do, they have a lot of trigger warnings. You know, that's understandable, but, you know, in our group that's made for ourselves, you know, that's one of our rules, is that there are no, we don't ever know what's going to trigger us. It could be a song and could blow a certain way, you know, we didn't want to structure our group too much, you know, not too many rules, and allow for me. We're a little bit of a group, goofy, macabre little bunch that, you know, might have always interested in, you know, the subject beforehand. You know, I mean, we have people who, you know, a woman who is a mortician, you know, we have asked her very serious questions, you know. So, yeah, we're a little odd bunch. That's why we work. So, you know, not everything's always for everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's really the thing, is finding your niche. And I remember.
And if you can't, you know, go ahead.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Nikki has done, which is wonderful. I remember about after my daughter passed, and I had just been walking around with shock. I don't know what it was, and everybody kept coming up to me going, oh, she's hugging Jesus in heaven right now, and then, of course, we're turning around going, he's burning in hell. She killed herself, and I was getting really tired of it, but I was really struggling, and I was having feelings myself that were really alarming to me. So I got a hold of our local suicide support group. And it was funny, the leader of the support group is just a wonderful woman, and she lost her 17-year-old son about 25 years ago to suicide. And she still kind of laughs about the first thing I said to her is, I see you guys meet in a church. Are you religious? Because I don't want to hear any more of the Jesus bullshit. And she was wonderful about it. And this is what we need. And she kind of giggled and said, you know, there are people in the group that have different beliefs. I myself am Catholic, but we just take that as part of our grieving process, and our group is not based on our religious beliefs, and everybody's open to that. And I did find good support in this, and though I was the only non-believer in the group, no one else in the group tried to push their on me, but I had to really be very forward about that. And I'm fortunate that I live in a that is fairly accepting of those beliefs, especially among the suicide, can be a bit of a black sheep.
Yeah, absolutely. I could certainly see that.
Taboo.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the year before my neighbor's son was turned in and shot and killed point blank, and I was helping her with this, you know, tremendous case, which is mind-blowing how boggled the city of Lewis handled it beginning to end. And of course, all while this was special court gun docket trying to get passed so they could sort of streamline exactly these sort of, you know, tragedies. And it wasn't but a year later that my son, you know, she told me that, you know, here she had lived on the street for 10 years. And, you know, when Matthew died, I think myself and one other neighbor knocked on her door, and that was it, you know. And she was shocked by that, because this is a good Christian neighborhood, you know. We've got a lot of good Christians along here. They're all about community, compassion, you know. It was just, it kind of blew her mind, you know, that it was lone atheist on the street, and, you know, that, you know, really stepped forward and helped her out. And, you know, so that when Austin died, you know, she was absolutely there for me 100%. And, you know, it just goes to show that we can all live together. You know, we really can, and that it takes effort on all of our parts. You have to act with humility and compassion. And, you know, I would really challenge the Christians in my area and wherever else really study that in themselves and ask themselves if that's, you know, the sort of response that my city should have had with this, you know, young man. And, you know, I would hope they would come to a a different conclusion.
I think that's a very important point he just made, and I do want to also make this clear. Many of the people that have supported, who have been by my side, have been very religious. One of my closest friends that I love, that I would send my children to live with her if something happened to me and my husband, she's Pentecostal. And she's one of the most compassionate, beautiful people I've ever met. So I do have many religious friends who have not tried to see as a vulnerability, and they have supported me. And they have. And what I realize when I'm trying to support other people, that when they're religious, this is their religion, is their comfort, is what's helping them get surviving
right,
this,
right.
Thinking about their loved one being in heaven, being in paradise, you know, reincarnated, whatever. And I'm not going to take that from them. I will
then you're the bad guy.
I will open my heart and listen to them. And that's essentially all that we're really asking of other people.
Right.
And I have had many, you know, several very close friends, especially, who have accepted that my non-belief is not something, I'm not mad at God. That's not how it happened. I actually think about these things, and they know that I'm a good person. I am, you know, not your angry atheist down the street. They know that I'm a good person, and they have supported me, and they have just been there as in to listen and support me. And I've had maybe two that have actually taken up the flag of, yes, we need more secular services and hospitals to perform basic clergy type of roles.
Well, that is certainly something great to hear, that there are people that empathize with our side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we're trying to, you know, we empathize, and that's all we're asking in return, is for other people to empathize with us. And there are people out there who certainly can that.
Right.
And that means the world
right.
to all of us.
Right.
And I've said before that, you know, when you look at basic faith systems, that their action and their empathy and their love and their help and their support is what their religion is all about. That's the core of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really appreciate you ladies coming on with me today. It has been a wonderful conversation.
Good, good. I feel that too. You know, I mean, it's just people have to talk about it. And these are the these are the hard things to talk about. Those are the ones that are often the most important.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't.
And I just, one last thing. I would like, you know, to make a call to action for anybody who's listening to consider pursuing secular chaplaincy, either themselves or supporting it in their communities, writing to their local organizations, to their hospitals, or themselves, you know, becoming secular chaplains. The huge, what they call
and
the
therapists.
Nuns, people who are unaffiliated with any yeah. religion, is growing faster than any other religious population in the United States. Huge
and we
need.
We need secular therapists to join the Secular Therapist Project.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Yes, absolutely we do.
So yeah, we'll definitely put the word out for that secular chaplaincy. I can't even say it. That's weird. That's one of the things about my show. I have issues with words.
Yeah, but also people need to support that in their day, especially
absolutely.
Right to hospitals, to call
right,
hospitals,
right. Start
and
with the
saying,
hospitals.
Hey, this is
yeah.
a need.
Right,
funeral
right.
homes.
Because that's, well, that's what I was by Lewis area hospital is that, well, nobody's ever asked. We've never had anybody
yes,
ask.
Yes, and I hear that,
that
all the time. As a nurse,
mm-hmm.
that's,
we don't see
that's
a need.
When
yep.
I bring
there's
it up,
no, need.
No one asks.
Yep. So ask.
Yeah.
Ask.
I certainly get that. Make sure you ask. I myself am a humanist
don't
celebrant.
Wait until you need.
Right. Yeah. I myself am a humanist celebrant, so I do weddings and things like that. I haven't done any funerals yet, and I'm not sure if I can. So.
Why, they would let you?
Oh, yeah.
What? Oh, they would. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I live...
that is again.
Right.
I'm not. I would love to be able to do that, but again, I'm not there yet. I'm not ready for that yet.
Right.
Robert, we actually read. So you want a physicist to speak at your funeral at my son's memorial?
Oh, that is awesome.
We were our own secular chaplain.
that's excellent.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm gonna put that on the show notes. For this show.
Perfect.
Yeah, because that's one of my favorite
yeah.
things. I've got it so
that's
that
one of my favorite.
That's what's going to be read at my funeral.
Perfect.
There's several memes about it online that are Richard Dawkins from Unweaving the Rainbow. And that for me has been a lot of comfort that he talks about we're all going to die, but were we to complain because we missed lottery life and the chances we were going to be. I love that one as well.
Right. That one speaks to too. You know, you've got all this. Don't you think it's a little bit, you know, I don't know, hubris, expect more?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got the Porsche, too happy, you know, tangent.
That's fine. We're all about tangents. It's all good. Yeah. During my training as a celebrant, I did read Corliss Lamont's I don't remember the exact name of the book, but it's basically how to do secular funerals. And I should probably go back and reread that. It's been a while.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll maybe get a call and people will know you're there. And, you know, that we want people to die, but we know people are going to die. There's definitely a need for, you know, secular chaplain for funerals. Absolutely. Yeah. I looked, but most of them were kind of, you know, non-denominational.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of the family members and a lot of the.
Right.
I don't care about that. If it's your kid.
Right.
You do that damn funeral however you
want. Right.
Exactly.
That's what I think.
Yeah,
I agree.
Members, exactly.
Well, it has been a wonderful time with you two. I've got to say that. You've made me think quite a bit about a lot of things. So.
Well, good, Robert. We're happy to have the chance to get it out there, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be shared.
Yeah, and hopefully people will hear and they'll know that they're not alone if they're experiencing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put all these links and stuff in the show notes so everybody can get to where they need to get to. Speaking of that, is there anything you guys wanted to specifically put out there as far as places people can go for resources and things like that?
Well, I would love to recommend a secular therapist project, but so far there's not one 200 miles of me. So, you know, I'll have to think about that one and get back to you.
Okay.
Okay.
I would also probably have to get back to you. There is when I was doing to find organizations for hospital chaplain in the United States, I actually found one. The closest thing I could find was UK that was an absolute model of four people or hospital chaplain. I'd love to. Also, if anybody's interested in about my daughter's her father a few days after she died, the blog of KAY.
That'd be great. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been very enlightening. So,
thank you.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you.
All right. So we'll be in contact. I'll probably talk to you guys again at some point in time.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. All right. Thanks. We always like to hear your feedback, so leave us a voicemail at 704-802-YAK or an email at podcast@secularyakking.com.
More input.
All comments are welcome. We like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+.
If you like our show, head over to your podcast directory of choice and leave us a 5-star review. If you really like the show, support the show on our Podbean patron page.
I'd buy that for $1.
And we'll be back next week with more yakking to please your eardrums.
Secular Yakking is a proud member of the Secular Outreach Network. Sun is a group of skeptical, secular, and humanist content creators collaborating with the goal of creating high-quality entertainment, and just maybe, to do some good along the way. Find out more about the Sun and the other shows that make up the network at secularoutreach.com.